This is a Zach Feldman Show replay on ZRadioLive.com.
The Webs Hit Music Station, Z Radio Live. This is the Zach Feldman Show. Joining me over the phone is an author. She has a new book out coming out very soon, around September, called Made for Me. It's Karishma French Dean. Karishma, thanks so much for joining me here on the Zach Feldman Show. How's everything going?
Oh, it's going great, Zach. And I'm really excited to be on your show and talk about this book.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. Well, tell me all about this brand new book that's coming out very soon.
So it is a memoir. I've written other books and different genres, but this one is the memoir of my life. And little background, I was divorced, met the love of my life. That's the beginning of the book.
That's a good start.
It's a good start, right? I didn't give my whole history, just when everything seemed that's when life really began for me. Was when I married my husband and everything was just amazing. You know, I mean, we clicked, everything just was, all the things that you can make a list about. We had the same list written down. We actually did that. We went into count, you know, like they do premarital counseling before you're, you know, right before you get married, and just want to make sure that you've got a good expectation and blah, blah, blah. And our lists were exactly the same. And it really was quite a foreshadowing of the rest of our lives together, because we just were very comfortable naturally.
Well, I want to ask you, why did you feel you had to go to premarital counseling before you said
yes? It wasn't premarital counseling. It was premarriage counseling.
Oh, sorry, so, premarriage counseling. Excuse me.
Know, yeah, basically, they say, hey, let's go in. Let's just make sure you guys are on the same page. You know, the guy who was going to be marrying us was having a visit with us. So I don't know. We didn't go. It wasn't because, you know, it was more of just their policy of, you know, this is what we do before you get married. So it was fine. It was a good precursor to know that, hey, my initial thoughts of absolutely yes, I will marry you were spot on. And they continued to be that way through the 5 years of our marriage. We just understood each other. I thought that I had arrived. I felt like the first 22 years of a really bad marriage were just, you know, like a mulligan. And then finally I had arrived where everyone else was, which after he passed, I didn't have that understanding. It was more of a, oh, we had something that most people never have. And so it was halfway into our marriage that he was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And at this point, we were working together side by side and everything. We were both realtors. He's in the film industry. So we were just always together. We were that couple that not only were married, but literally did everything together. Woke up together, had breakfast together, went to work together, and we loved it. You know, when COVID hit, it was fabulous because we were sequestered to our house. We actually loved that anyway. So when he was diagnosed, it was just such a gut punch. But because we're both such positive, manifesting, we'll surmount this. It'll be just a, you know, rear view mirror picture for our life of what we've accomplished. And so I moved into the hospital with him and I stayed by his bedside. And I just want to put a plug to any human who's alive. If you go to the hospital, you have to go with someone. You need an advocate, because though these people, and in all honesty, I don't like to deitize any kind of job or any person. And I think we do that with doctors and nurses, thinking that somehow, you know, they are going above and beyond. No, that's their job. They went into their job. They understood that that was their job. They do their job. And just like any job, they become calloused or they become plateaued, you know.
Well, that's not to say that every single person who goes into medical field.
Every single person.
No, I wouldn't say that about every single person, though. I mean, listen, my wife's a respiratory therapist, you know, and she does anything for her patients. I tell her, like, listen, you can take off of work, you know, whenever you want. She's like, no, because it would take them forever to get another appointment. Like, I need to be in there for them, you know. And I think a lot of people like that are like that in the medical field.
I believe that they have, and just coming from my perspective, you know, you're looking at your wife, maybe you'd feel differently if you were her patient, but you know, it's, it's
probably not. I'd probably be like, oh shit, I actually am attracted to my I'd be like, oh wait a minute, maybe I have to figure out how to marry her. Okay. No, but anyway, no, you know. I would just say though, honestly, like, you know, I mean, listen, I don't know. I obviously don't know what you've been through. And obviously, it breaks my heart that you've been through, you know, what you've been through with your husband, you know, and I'm glad. I hope he's OK now, you know, and kind of thriving through it, you know. But, you know, I think honestly, I mean, when it comes to the medical field, it takes a lot of guts to get into that practice. Yeah. It takes a lot of courage also to get into, you know, such a tough field.
Yes. And a really brains. Yes.
Yeah. 100%, you know,
talent, all of that, but you can't negate the mortality of it, the humanness of it. And even your wife gets into a cadence with some things that she does regularly, because that's what I'm talking about. There's some things that we just naturally do. And that's why humans make mistakes. If they didn't, you'd have to be inhuman not to make mistakes or not to have a bad day. You know, sometimes they have a bad day. They're just human. Is what I'm trying to illustrate.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Human.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, everybody's human when it comes down to that.
Yes, and sometimes their humanness gets in the way of something serious for you.
Yeah.
So, and they can't control that they had a fight with whoever before they came to work, or someone cut them off, or they were in an accident. They can't control that. So it's imperative that the patient have an advocate, someone who is only there to make sure everything goes well for them. To keep everybody accountable, to make sure that if you see something like they weren't changing their gloves. So it was not uncommon. And this is at a good hospital. We were at two hospitals, and one of them was good and the other one was not. And the one that wasn't is internationally renowned, MD Anderson. And they treat you just like an assembly line. It's crazy. Having me there to see that they weren't changing their gloves after they touched the hat that had his feces and urine in it. And then they came over, or doing blood cultures off the floor and having his central line drop on the floor, not changing it, just plugging it right back into his heart, you know, things like this at a good hospital. So it's imperative. And I know, just talking to the other people who were also there, you know, this is long-term care. This isn't just, I broke my leg and I'm in for maybe overnight care. This is a year and a half, almost 2 years of living in a hospital. And you see things that no one would see unless they were in that circumstance.
Well, how's your husband doing now?
My husband didn't make it.
He didn't make it. Got it.
My husband passed in March 4th, 2022.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yes.
You know, and sorry. Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to say he had really good care here in Utah, but when we went to Houston, it was marginal. And there were, he had a nurse that I contribute his death to her, and the nurse before, they didn't watch his numbers. They didn't check him like they did here in Utah. I mean, here in Utah, they would have, we've got to get an x-ray. We've got to get an ultrasound. You know, there were things that they would do and we had no idea. There was no manifestation physically in front of me visually, but they'd been watching his numbers so close that they knew something has, you know, medications were changed right away. There was a morning that he started to cough. That would have never happened in Utah. They would have jumped on his numbers the night before and changed medications and had an x-ray to see what was going on. He coughed from 10 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock at night when he was coughing up blood clots. And I kept asking the nurse. She was more concerned about her checklist. She was new and she was worried if she didn't get everything on her checklist done, that she might get in trouble. She didn't care that the patient might die. And he was sequestered to the ICU because of that. They blew up his prostate trying to get a catheter in. It was crazy. And, you know, he was passing blood clots in his urine, which he didn't have to actually, he didn't have blood, extra blood. He was low on platelets and blood. Those were things he was getting regularly because of his leukemia. So it was a fascinating, eye-opening experience of how human everybody is.
Yeah.
And how much I wish I would have had more medical background, but I did the best, you know, I was the squeaky wheel.
Yeah. You know what? And at the end of the day, you know, you are doing the best you can, you know, and you are doing the best that you can. And you're doing the best when it comes to, you know, the place you pick to, you know, to send, you know, somebody who's sick to go to, you know, you don't know what's going to happen when you send somebody somewhere. That's you know,
exactly right.
But did you ever attempt to maybe like, you know, to try to get him out of that situation when you noticed that?
I did. I immediately said, after she didn't listen to me, I finally went in and found another nurse. And I said, you need to come into our room right now. And even though they finally called mid-levels, and there's teams upon teams, some of the time it's impossible to get a straight answer because there's so many different teams working with one patient. And eventually, I mean, we had a glimpse of things were going to turn around, but towards the very end, he'd been intubated for 9 days. And when we got him extubated, he had only a couple of days before he started to fall again. And it just, we ended up having to do hospice care in the hospital. It was very traumatic watching someone pass. People always like to say that it's spiritual, that it's sacred, that it's even a blessing, you know, to be present for that. I've been present for a couple of deaths now, and neither one of them, none of them, all three, they were all horrific. It was horrific to watch someone gasping for air, begging you to help them. And knowing that I just was praying, my daughter was there. She kept trying to put the cannula in, trying to keep him breathing, but he couldn't breathe because his lungs were shutting down. Mm-hmm. And I was just standing next to her, holding him, praying as hard as I could that he could just go.
Well, I'm so sorry that happened to you, you know, and I think that's just really terrible, you know, the situation you had to be in, you know, and I guess I want to ask you too, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, what was the reasoning really for writing this book?
So that the book starts off with a love story, goes into loss. It hits grief. My grief was compounded by the fact that my in-laws turned against me and they just made claims that were untrue, saying that I dragged him out to Texas. That's the reason why he died. I wasn't taking care of him. Just things that were just blatantly untrue, but unnecessary in a situation where, you know, this person has passed. There's no way to verify it with the person who could.
Yeah. But as you said before, too, it's the same thing. It's we're all human. Yeah,
it's inhuman. Right. And just so that level of grief, people lose and they have grief, but my grief was just inconsolable. It was just, I was on fire all the time. That's what I tell people. I feel like I'm burning inside. And it was truly a physical manifestation of burning on my insides. And the book covers that. And then it rolls into a redemptive miracle where I was at my wit's end. It had been 2.5 years and I was so tired and I couldn't see how to get out of the torturous situation I was in. I was trapped within my own body. And I basically told God, you better do something or I'm going to. And it was shortly thereafter that my husband reached out, and he's the man who married my late husband and I. I was actually, it's just such a crazy story because.
So you married somebody who married you.
Yeah. I know. And what a miracle. He literally saved my life. He literally saved my life. There's no other way to explain it. We weren't dating. He came in. He asked me to pie. I went. We went to dinner again. And after the dinner, I came home and I was like, wait, there's something different about me. Why don't I feel like I'm on fire? So I went to my therapist and said, hey, what should I do? And she explained that I should be as blunt as I normally am and ask. And that's when he disclosed that he had been in love with me for 7 years. And it was shortly within, I'm saying 5 days, we were married.
Wow.
So this story is just a story of love, loss, extraordinary grief to the point, grief that pushes you to your your breaking point, the point where you're like, I got to get out of this life. I got to have relief somehow. And then having God step in with this miracle to allow for some redemption. You know, grief will never go away. And the purpose of the book is to show people the cycle, to see, I know I'm not the only one who's experienced this. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not the only one who has been shut into a corner and non-verbally asked to stay quiet, or maybe even verbally asked to be, you know, you need to stop. You know, we have no space for your grief. We have no space for you. Or the improper and inappropriate things that people say to someone who's lost everything. You know, this book is going to give some insight into how people need to navigate those in their life. And I tell people, it's kind of funny because people treated me and still treat me like I'm contagious. And the joke's on them. We all already have the virus.
What do you mean by contagious? What do you mean by that?
Meaning that, you know, death is contagious. Yep. And you've already got the virus, buddy.
I've never heard that before, but
you are 100% going to die and you don't know when.
Yeah, I've never heard that before.
Going to die and you don't know when. So, you know, I mean, like,
are you talking about me?
I'm saying like everyone, you know, they treat people who've just lost a spouse or a child like they're a pariah. Like if they get too close to them, that's going to happen to them. And that's,
I mean, I don't know who you're hanging out with, but it sounds like they're real, they're not the right people. I mean, I don't think anybody in my friend group would say something like that.
I actually know for sure
a lot of people will not say that.
You would be shocked.
I don't know.
I'm not even joking. I felt the same.
Listen, I mean,
I would have said the same thing.
Then maybe you need to get some new friends, I think, because I mean, that's pretty fucking terrible.
Maybe, but I'm just saying the general population in the world, in this country specifically, struggles with the appropriate way to deal with grief.
Well, yeah, that's 100% true. I think it's hard for anybody to deal with grief. You know, it's a scary topic for sure. But you know, everybody handles it differently. And, you know, but you know, if it's important, obviously, hopefully get somebody to say some, you know, to be a little bit nicer to you, you know, that'd be nice. Cause that's kind of terrible. All right. So what have we learned from the interview? We've learned, you know, you need to get new friends. Right. And you should check out her book for sure. It's called Made for Me, and it's going to be coming out. When is it coming out? In September?
Yeah. September, early October is when we're looking. Yep.
Awesome. Very cool. And where can people pre-order it now?
We'll have a link that we're sending over to you that you can put up, and we would love to see the pre-orders. It's a timely and monumental book. It will touch every part of everyone's life, whether they're in the beginning and middle. It's going to touch you and shed some light, you know. Maybe they need new friends too.
Well, hopefully it doesn't insult me.
No, absolutely.
That'd be nice. I'm only joking. Thank you so much for coming on the Zach Feldman Show. Seriously, I'm so excited to see, you know, where this goes. Is there going to be a follow-up book?
I have some children's books that are already out. I am thinking about a follow-up book of The Life I Now Have, just to give more of that redemptive, hopeful view that life can be incredibly painful, incredibly shocking, but it can also be shockingly wonderful.
So. Yeah, 100%. Well, Karishmi, thank you so much for joining me here on the Zach Feldman Show. Best of luck with the book and best of luck with everything.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Anytime. The Web City Music Station, Z Radio Live. Back with more Zach Feldman Show right after this.
Want to hear more? Listen to the Zach Feldman Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on ZRadioLive.com.